SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
That's a good question. After these 2 weeks that we've not been making new episodes of The Secrets of the Hobbit, we took a little Easter break, and what do you know, the web is overflowing with news from New Zealand. Fortunately, to bring us up to speed, we have Dave Kale from Southern California. Are you from Southern California?
Or is that's it where I live, but I'm originally from Arkansas.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, sounds cool to say Southern California because it's so far away from the Netherlands here.
You can say that. I've been here for 2 years and in California for 10, so I'm practically from California now.
Boy, oh boy. We should never skip another episode, Dave. Because
I know.
I don't know how we're
up.
How are we going to get to the end of the show with so much news? We're never going to be able to cram that into 1 hour, but we're going to give it a try with the important news first. And I was so excited to read that we get another actor from the original trilogy back for The Hobbit. And it is... I was waiting for
I'm
you.
I'm sorry. Ian Holm playing Bilbo. I assume that's who you're talking about.
Exactly. That's him.
Yes.
The original, the true and one and only real Bilbo will be back.
Well, you just set that up for me and I swung and missed. Yes. Ian Holm's returning. I think we all sort of were secretly hoping he would and wondering how in God's name they would pull it off.
Absolutely.
And I'm still wondering how they're going to pull it off, but I'm still excited because I really enjoyed his performance in Lord of the Rings, and I think he's one of those actors from the Lord of the Rings that I think we all kind of wanted to be back. And so Peter Jackson's throwing us a bone.
Did he publish that on his Facebook page, or was there an official press release?
I think he published it on his Facebook page.
That's so cool that they use social media page sites like Facebook for such important press announcements. It just shows how much the market for news has shifted. They don't even bother, you know, gathering the press for something like that. Just post it up on a Facebook page and you will reach more people faster than if you would do it the old-fashioned way. Absolutely fantastic. Now, he will be back, as far as I understand, as the old Bilbo. Another indication that he will be probably part of the framework of the story, and that we will see some kind of scene in which Frodo and Bilbo are together just browsing through the Red Book and, you know, reminiscing of what happened during the events of The Hobbit. And of course,
I'm not quite sure what the... you know, framework will be for that, but I presume that's how it will work.
Yep. And where will he be? Will he be on the other side of the Grey Havens, or will he still be in the Shire? And we're going to get some scene that is part of the time frame of the Lord of the Rings movies, but just something that we didn't see. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. Other big news was that, and also casting news, was that one of the dwarfs went home. What happened?
Yes. This is Rob, let's make sure I get his name right, Rob Kaczynski. He just dropped out. They haven't given us too many details about it. Just that he left for personal reasons.
Yes.
He's returning home to the UK.
Now he was cast for Feely, right?
Yes, he's playing the dwarf Feely, and he's just we don't have too many details other than the fact that he's dropped out. Peter Jackson wrote something really nice about him on his Facebook page. I mean, you know, just as an aside, getting back to the social media thing, it's really amazing that. I think at least half the news that we're going to be discussing today comes from Peter Jackson's Facebook page. And, of course, it gets picked up by the other news outlets, and they do actual press releases. But Peter Jackson has been unusually generous with posts on his Facebook page in the last 2 weeks. Maybe it's in, you know, Easter spirit or something. But
I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg has to be very, very happy about that.
Yeah, right. He's taking it. He wants Facebook to be the only thing we use on the internet, and he's slowly winning.
This might be part of a very complicated strategy of Mark Zuckerberg to be an extra in The Hobbit.
I think so.
He's just using all his power to be an elf or something like that, a Facebook elf.
Yes. So now, Peter Jackson says about Rob, Rob has been terrific to work with, and his enthusiasm and infectious sense of humor will be missed by all of us. And then he goes on to reassure us that it's not going to affect the production of the show, of the movie, or the release. Basically they haven't done much with the dwarves yet in terms of actual filming. They've mostly been focusing on scenes with just Bilbo. So there's never a good time for this. It's sad, of course, but if someone were to drop out of the production, this was a good time to do it, you might say.
I was looking at Robert Kaczynski's Twitter feed, because he's on Twitter, and he gives a few more details about him leaving. He got, a lot of reactions and signs of support. And he writes on April 24th, "Thanks for all your support. Peter and the team have been the most wonderful and supportive team to work for. And it's with a truly sad heart." And then I assume that he ran out of characters for that. And then he continued in the second post, "It's with a truly sad heart that things have turned out this way. The Hobbit will go on to be as great as I've seen, and I will miss the family and friends that I have here. But from every disaster, I have tried to make an opportunity," says a John D. Rockefeller. And then apparently he got some questions from his Twitter followers, and a certain Duncan Powell, or P-O-W, has asked him what the reason was of his departure, and then he answers, "It's all health issue, Dunks. All will be well in time, I promise." So it looks like this is health-related.
And
perhaps he had to go back for treatment or something like that, and he knew that if he would continue without treatment, he would jeopardize the production. I don't know, but it must be one of the most difficult decisions in his acting career to step out of such a high-profile opportunity that The Hobbit certainly is, and will be for many, many years. It's very, very sad for him.
Right.
Now, they have found...
I wonder if it could be maybe a sick family member, and he doesn't want to.
That could also be possible. Yes, it could be someone that he's related to. Or anyway, it's not up to us to speculate about that.
No.
But we do wish him all the best, and we also wish the same for his successor, the one that's going to replace him. Apparently, they immediately found a Kiwi actor to replace Robert. In for the role of Feely. And who was that again?
His name is Dean O'Gorman. This is, again, coming from Peter Jackson's Facebook page. He's going to become our main source of news on this production. His name's Dean O'Gorman. I think he's sort of well-known on New Zealand television. He was in a Kiwi series called The Almighty Johnsons. I don't know anything about it.
I looked it up. It's a story of Norse gods living in modern New Zealand. That sounds like a very cool plot device to put some Norse gods in an apartment in New Zealand and then just film. It's probably some kind of a sitcom or something like that. But
kind of want to watch that now.
Yeah, me too. It sounds great.
Yeah, and I guess Peter Jackson says, "I should let fans of the show know that our shooting schedule allows Dean to continue with the second series next year." So,
very good.
Good news for fans of the show. His participation in The Hobbit will not interfere with his filming of The Almighty Johnsons. Thank goodness.
He has some experience in fantasy, in other fantasy franchises as well, because he has appeared in Xena, Warrior Princess, and also in Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. So he's probably used to running around in all sorts of exotic gear, hurling battle cries to
in the middle of the New Zealand countryside.
Yes. Well,
wow, that makes him a very good fit.
That's probably why he was on the short list. They must have like a list of emergency actors or people that are like on the B list if anything goes wrong, so they can recast very quickly. Because you don't want to be doing a whole casting process while you're in the middle of shooting a movie. So they must have like several people that were up for the role already, and they just called number two. Let's hope it's going to be the last actor to having to step out during the production. An actress that we talked about a lot in previous episodes and speculated about her role in The Secrets of in The Hobbit was Saoirse Ronan, who was, of course, the star of The Lovely Bones. And she was rumored to play the woodland elf Itaril in The Hobbit. Now, she finally broke the silence and said in an interview that she will not be taking on that role. She says it's not going to work out with The Hobbit, unfortunately, because I would have been working for about a year on it, and there were other projects that I was very interested in. But Pete and his producer wife, Fran, have been very good about it and very understanding. I will have to just go back to down to New Zealand for a holiday and hang out with the Hobbits. So that puts an end to that rumor. However, the big question, of course, is, and this is fiercely debated, as you can imagine, on the various forums dedicated to the Hobbit production, is, does this also mean the end of the character Itaril in The Hobbit? Or is this just a little casting problem? To me, it sounds like the character is definitely part of the story. And they hoped to get Saoirse Ronan for it, but probably because of, you know, at the end of all the negotiations, she chose to play other roles, or perhaps when she realized how much of an investment it would be time wise, she decided to not do the role, and they probably cast someone else.
I took it as a confirmation that character was actually in the movie. It made it sound like it was from her side that she just wouldn't be able to do the movie with the schedule. Not, oh, turns out that character, that was just a rumor made up on the internet. It's not actually in the movie. So
exactly.
I imagine that they'll probably find some Kiwi actor or something. Maybe if they can't get a big name actress for the role, maybe they'll cut some scenes out or minimize the importance of it, but it sounds to me like they're going with it. And I really, from what we saw in Lord of the Rings, I would imagine that they're making an effort to try and either emphasize or perhaps add female characters. You know, so, because this show, even more than the Lord of the Rings. Or this story, even more of the Lord of the Rings, is really, really male-centric. And so...
And that, by the way, seems to be also a part of the whole controversy about this book that would feature the character of Tolkien as a character. Remember that whole thing?
Yes.
That the Tolkien estate was threatening to sue the author of this book that would feature Tolkien because, it, you know, it's kind of a mixture of fantasy and then the real person of Tolkien. They settled out of court. The book will be published, but it will be in an adapted way, and there will be some modifications. But just reading the news about that whole controversy, I saw that the author also wants to make a statement about the fact that in a lot of these Tolkien stories, there are no women, or almost no women, as hero characters. They're just like really relegated to the side of the story. It's just the unimportant roles. It seems that Peter Jackson wants to correct that also a little bit in his own way, just as he has done, by the way, in The Lord of the Rings by giving bigger roles to some of the female characters in The Fellowship of the Ring and The Two Towers. So I'm not totally against that, actually. I think it's going to be good for the balance of the story, but also good for the audience because, of course, if you've got a mixed audience and they need strong characters to relate to, and some extra girl power won't hurt the story, I think.
Yeah, I think for a movie in this modern age, you know, whatever without touching on whether the actual story in the book itself is deficient for having no females. I would say for the movie, even if there's no principled reason for doing it, practical reasons to get girls to come and watch it, I would say that it's probably almost a necessity. Not that I, you know, want anyone to construe me as saying that girls only watch movies with girls in it, but I know for example, my girlfriend really liked the fact that female characters in Lord of the Rings were sort of emphasized and given bigger roles, and she complains about the fact that there aren't many good female characters in Tolkien stuff. So I think it's sort of, you know, they want to make a movie that everybody will enjoy watching and be able to enjoy the story of The Hobbit, even if it's not exactly the same one as the one that's in the book. They want to make a story that will appeal to a lot of people. And so I think this is one of their strategies, and I don't think it's unreasonable.
Well, and it's not that it's totally foreign to the world of Middle Earth. I mean, there were these strong female characters, elves, or what's her name again, Eowyn,
Eowyn from Eowyn. Rohan and Galadriel, and
right.
Arwen in Rivendell. There are strong female characters, and there's even more in some of the other stories, the Silmarillion, and some of the other things.
The only thing that Peter Jackson did in the Lord of the Rings trilogy is to kind of extend those roles so that they mm-hmm. kind of appear at various moments throughout the movie, so you get the impression that they are an integral part of the story itself, whereas in Tolkien they would just be part of a small episode. And especially in The Hobbit, The Hobbit is already a pretty simple story it's a children's story, so there is no place for romance in the original story, but I think in the spirit of Tolkien you can definitely introduce something like that just to make it more of an adult story perhaps.
Yeah, and even the romance aside, just having some female characters involved in various scenes and discussions and battles and that sort of stuff. And you know, like you said, I don't think that it's foreign or alien to the world, and I would even be willing to argue that they're not. They're just showing us things that Tolkien didn't show us. It's not like women weren't doing anything in the Middle Earth. They maybe we didn't get too many glimpses of what they were doing in the stories that he tells in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. But that doesn't mean that there weren't any women or that women weren't doing anything important. We just don't see it. But they certainly were. So I think it's consistent with the spirit of the movie. I think, you know, depending on how they handle it, I think the romance stuff in Lord of the Rings was tasteful and respectful of Tolkien. I think if they made it a little more Twilight-ish, if I can risk upsetting
Don't
the Twilight
fans.
Don't
mention that word here. Oh my goodness. Please.
Yes.
No glittering skin in The Hobbit, please, because I'll just not watch the movie. I was wondering, by the way, do you think that there are some limits to what Peter Jackson can do in terms of changing the story? I mean, is Christopher Tolkien involved in any way in supervising this or protecting the let's say the, how do you call that, the word is on the tip of my tongue, the...
The canon
of Middle Earth.
That's a good question.
I don't know because
J.K. Rowling has a lot to say and do with the movie scripts for Harry Potter.
Absolutely.
But I think I'm going to guess from my totally uninformed place. I'm going to guess it has something to do with what contract that they sign. If I recall correctly. Christopher Tolkien, basically, when they were working on the Lord of the Rings films, basically released a statement saying that he had nothing to do with them. You know, basically, he didn't want people to... basically, it was sort of saying in a roundabout way that he disapproved of the films and the changes they were making, and he didn't want anyone to think that he supported it. So if I had to guess, I would say that whatever right, however it was that they sold the rights for these movies back in like the 60s or 70s when Tolkien sold them originally, and mm-hmm. then since then they've been passed along and sold from one party to the next, I'm guessing they signed something that, didn't give him a ton of control, you know, didn't give them a ton of control over the script. And I have a feeling
could be actually a good thing.
Yeah. Or it could be that they decided, like, look, there's very little chance that we'll be terribly happy with what comes out of it just because we're not convinced these stories translate well to the screen. And mm-hmm. so maybe they just said, you know, do whatever you want. We're not going to worry about it. We're just going to distance ourselves from it. But they seem to be much less involved than Joanna Rowling is, because yes. I know Rowling, like, has a really, really close working relationship with Steve Kloves, and mm-hmm. that she gets, you know, she certainly has veto power over certain things, and kind of tends to. And even, I don't know if it's in the contract, she has to approve every word, but they certainly are deferential to her, and that doesn't seem to be the case here. And I don't think it really matters. I think it's good. I think Peter Jackson and the other screenwriters are sufficiently respectful and appreciative of the story and doing their best. And it's probably good that they have some flexibility and freedom to you know, do things that aren't – it's good that they're not slavish to the script, because it – especially with The Hobbit, you'd end up with a really goofy movie.
This could be an interesting question to ask Peter Jackson himself, which brings us to our next news item. You actually can. Peter Jackson has invited his fans to come up with 20 questions that he will ask. And this is part of almost a tradition now, because he's already done this before for the Lord of the Rings. And he talks about it on his Facebook page, where he writes, and this was on Monday, May the 2nd, I quote, "It seems like a lifetime ago now, but way back at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings, I agreed to answer 20 questions sent into the Ain't It Cool website." I don't know if you know the Ain't It Cool website, Dave. It's a long-standing film, a movie website by Harry Knowles, and I know Harry Knowles from my Star Wars days, where he would post all these photos from the set of Star Wars. He did that for many movies. He had some really good inside sources in many productions. Like there was this whole brouhaha about him leaking conceptual art for the movie Starship Troopers, and then actually he kind of made a deal with Sony about it, I think. He has quite the reputation when it comes to movie news. And before the Lord of the Rings started production, Harry Knowles sorted through all those questions that were sent in and gave me his pick, and this is again Peter Jackson's talking, which I did my best to answer, even though we were in the very early pre-production stage. Now, I thought you might like to do the same again with The Hobbit, using this Facebook page. So let's get into it. If there's anything you'd like to know about the movies we're making, please send me questions on this page, and we'll start answering 20 of them. And who knows, if we have fun, why stop at 20? So let's get it underway. Over to you. Cheers, Peter Jackson. Now, of course, you can imagine that this has generated quite a few comments. 2,996 comments, to be precise.
We're over 3,000 at this exact second.
Oh my goodness. It's unbelievable, and it's actually very interesting to read through all those questions. And we could probably do an episode of The Hobbit every single day, all the way up to the release of the movie, just talking about these questions and speculating about what Peter Jackson might answer. Because there's some very, very involved Tolkien fans that are asking these questions. There are also some weird questions in there, like super obvious stuff, like, are you going to put the stone trolls into the story? Like, duh. No, of course he is. But also some very, very, you know, like almost geeky questions. Fascinating stuff, and it will be interesting to see which ones he picks. Of course, if he wants to kind of not reveal too much, he can just pick the easy questions. That's the advantage if you've got 3,000 questions to pick from. You can just pick the questions that you want to answer. So it gives him a lot of control. But I went back to the original 20 questions that he answered before the Lord of the Rings. And actually very interesting to just with all the knowledge that we have now, to look back at what he answered at the time when everybody was still guessing, you know, what will this movie going to be? We are in a situation where we've already seen what he's done with the Lord of the Rings, so we kind of know what we can expect. But at the time, nobody had a single clue of what this recreation of Middle-earth would look like. And so there are questions that he answered about the physical portrayals of the main characters. You know, are you going to use small people to do the hobbits? Are you going to use CGI for the hobbits and the dwarves? How is that going to look? People were very worried that he would, you know, fail to do it well enough. And he is already saying here in the answer to the first question about how are you going to portray the smaller characters, he's like, I didn't want to use CGI because you need to bond with these characters. They are very important to the story. So we are going to use real actors and we'll just kind of size them down either with CGI or with optical tricks. And I'm so glad that he went for a realistic approach. And I think the only moment that he, in my humble opinion, but what do I know, the only moment that he really dropped the ball was at the beginning of the extended version of The Return of the King with the whole Sméagol Genesis story. I personally think that didn't work at all, the transition from the real actor to the CGI golem.
It was bizarre.
It was bizarre. It was unbelievable. It was so... It just didn't work. And I, gosh, was that in the original theatrical release as well, or is this just something that I saw in the? I just can't remember, but I think
it was, or maybe not everything, maybe just pieces of it, but I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't work for me, and I wish he had left it out.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a small problem that I had, but all the rest was really, really good. And story-wise, just to see where Gollum came from, the idea itself was great, but just the way that they did it, it didn't work. But... And a big accomplishment, I think, was that we did relate to Gollum and to Sméagol, his kind of secondary personality, because even though it was a CGI character, but I think we all felt for Gollum in some way or another.
I feel like, I wonder if just we're going off on a tangent. We'll never make it through the news now, but I'm going to do it anyway. I kind of think that was sort of the challenge, because they've done a lot of research that with these computer generated avatars and stuff, that people like them better when they're not, when they try not to be too realistic. And so Gollum's got like the huge eyes and he's kind of cartoonish, which I think makes him more relatable. And he's more relatable in a way that way than the actual human actor is when he appears.
Yes.
But then that introduces the problem of trying to transition him from a normal human looking person to this cartoonish figure with oversized eyes.
Right. Yep. That seems to be really weird. I mean, that just doesn't work. And it, of course, it was an afterthought to include the original actor and to do that transition. So I think if they knew right from the get-go that they were going to do that, they would probably have designed Gollum differently. But then again, I don't know. Gollum really works the way he looks. It's very consistent with the artwork that was already out there and kind of the way that we imagined Gollum to look like. Even his voice was already part of the, let's say, the culture around the Lord of the Rings, because I was re-listening to the audio version, the BBC audio play of The Hobbit that was made in the 60s while I was doing my running my marathon. I figured, you know, I gotta kind of zone out and not think about the pain and the heat. So I need a story, and so I put the entire audiobook on my little iPod shuffle, and I listened to most of it during the run, And it was actually very refreshing because it was very hot while running. And I was listening to that the part of the story where when they are in the Misty Mountains and it's snowing and it's cold. And it really helped. It kind of put me into a very refreshed state during those chapters. But the voice of Gollum is very similar to the voice that we hear by Circus in the current Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's just strikingly similar. How did I get onto this topic? I don't know. Oh, we were talking about the 20 questions that he answered about the Lord of the Rings. There is actually an answer about the Hobbit in those 20 original questions. So I'm really? Going to mention it. The second question that Peter Jackson answered at that time was, another major question that the fans have had has to do with the decision to make the Lord of the Rings prior to the Hobbit. Describe what made you decide to go with the trilogy first. What made you step over the Hobbit? And do you think that after your filmic journeys into Middle-earth with this trilogy, do you think you will want to visit Bilbo and his adventures from the first book? And then Peter Jackson answers, United Artists have owned the U.S. distribution rights to The Hobbit for many years, but not the right to actually make it. So they have distribution right. They had distribution rights, but not the production rights. I know that Miramax approached the UA, I guess that is kind of the estate or something, a couple of years ago, or mm-hmm. United Artists, probably. Yeah, Miramax approached United Artists a couple of years ago about doing some kind of partnership, but was not successful. That made up Miramax's mind to do The Lord of the Rings first. I am happy to be doing the trilogy first, since it is much more complex and interesting than The Hobbit. The Hobbit has a very simple story with very little character development. It would actually be harder to adapt into a satisfying movie than The Lord of the Rings, and that has not been easy. New Line Cinema have the right to make The Hobbit. United Artists still owns the distribution rights, and have every intention of doing it following the trilogy. I don't know if I would be involved. It depends on my mental condition in 3 years. Well, his mental condition is pretty good.
Apparently.
Actually, I was looking at some of the pictures that he posted, and we'll talk about which pictures later on in the news. And it looks to me that he's actually getting like a little heavier again. So I don't know if this is tied to the stress around the, you know, the ulcer and then later on all the casting problems, but it looks to me that Peter Jackson is starting to look like a bit of a hobbit again. He might not have enough time to go out for a run, and I don't know, it might be some stress eating involved. Wow, we're totally on a gossip routine here right now. Let's go back to the serious news. We're turning into the Hobbit Huffington Post. So, Dave, what is a question that you would like to ask Peter Jackson? And why haven't you already?
I should have asked it sooner, but I just did, actually, as we were talking. I was like, okay, I better go ask him.
So I
went on there and I asked him the question we were wondering. I asked him what their working relationship with the Tolkien estate is like.
Nice. Oh, good. Yes. Excellent.
I'm about question 3015, so could be a while before it gets to me, but...
Here's hoping.
Yes.
Very cool. Well, let's go back to the hardcore, serious facts and news that is out there. There is another bit of casting news, and this time it involves an actor called Lee Pace. And this was made public at the same time as the casting of Dean O'Gorman, who steps in for Philly. Mm-hmm. Lee Pace is apparently going to play the Elven King.
That's right.
And if I'm not mistaken, in the story of The Hobbit, it's never mentioned what his name is, right? He's just called the Elven King.
That's right. Yep.
But
that is correct.
His name is Thranduil. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Thank you. Thranduil. I think you got it right. I think you nailed it.
Ooh. Yes. So tell me about this Elven King. What do we know about him?
Sure. So he's in The Hobbit, he's just referred to as the Elven King. He's sort of this magisterial figure who is in charge of the Wood Elves, and he's very, very sort of suspicious and strict with the dwarves when they catch them. He's actually, in The Hobbit, he's kind of portrayed as a little petty and a little greedy even. They talk about his pride, the pride that he has in his treasure stores in his halls, and the fact that he, it's not as extensive or impressive as some of the treasures that, you know, great elf lords of the past had, and that he's got kind of an inferiority complex almost.
Nice.
And that sort of plays a role in the story because, you know, there's toward the end of The Hobbit, there's conflict between the various races who want to get at the treasure in Lonely Mountain. And so it's kind of interesting. His portrayal is a little different from the way elves are typically were portrayed in The Lord of the Rings, where they're sort of these very, very lofty, dignified characters.
Yes.
I wonder how they'll handle that. But in The Lord of the Rings, he's revealed as Legolas's father. And that's where his name is given, because at the Council of Elrond, they announce that Legolas is there and that he's an emissary of his father, Thranduil, the king of Mirkwood, who is, in fact, the elven king that we meet in The Hobbit. So, believe it or not, Lee Pace is going to play, assuming Orlando Bloom's in the film, even if he's not, he's still playing Orlando Bloom's father.
That is amazing, because they must be the same age, the actors. Yeah. At least they look as if they are the same age.
And Lee Pace kind of has a baby face a bit, so,
yeah.
So in a way, I actually think he looks younger. So, you know, I guess that's one of the tricky part of elves. And none of them ages, so eventually they hit a sort of a solid state where they all pretty much look the same age.
Well, yeah, I don't know. There's nothing a little makeup can't fix. And
that's true.
We don't know about elves. We do know about half elves, that they age a little bit, because of course Elrond is going to be part of The Hobbit, and he is played by the bad guy from The Matrix,
Hugo Weaving,
and it looks like we have a confirmation now that Hugo Weaving has indeed been cast as Elrond.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugo Weaving looks a lot older than he looked in The Matrix right now. He has a lot of wrinkles, and so he's kind of an atypical elvish appearance in The Lord of the Rings and in The Hobbit.
I suspect they're going to clean him up in the post production.
Yeah, a little bit of CGI wrinkle removal. Who knows? Because he has to look a little bit younger. Although we saw him in this whole mythological story at the beginning of the Fellowship, and he was fighting in those ancient wars, and he already looks kind of old in those scenes. So I don't know if they have to remove
maybe
too many wrinkles.
Maybe he hasn't aged per se, but he's suffered the effects of hardship in Middle Earth and wars and stuff.
That could be. Yeah, there's a lot of thinking involved. Hence all the wrinkles in his forehead. elves are always pondering, and he has a lot to ponder about.
That's true.
But it's cool because they're
constantly showing up asking him for help.
Absolutely. And there's so much at stake. Peter Jackson has posted a picture of him and Hugo Weaving on his Facebook page. I don't think there's an official confirmation yet, but it does kind of imply that he's in Middle Earth and he's been spotted. So there you
Either go. Either he is or he has nothing better to do.
Exactly. Peter Jackson posts next to, or as a comment with the picture, "An old friend came to visit me on set today." And then that one photo got 9,990 likes and 1,324 comments. And Peter Jackson just needs a whole team of people to read through all that stuff on Facebook. Unbelievable. But I do appreciate that he continues to post little answers and information to have a kind of a personal relationship to the fans. And I do believe that he's doing that himself. It's not a ghostwriter who does this.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely winning me over. You know, I'm one of the snobs that thinks that he doesn't like some of the changes he made to The Lord of the Rings. And I've been known to
berate him for it,
criticize him.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, like this Facebook page, I mean, not just the fact, I mean, The fact that he even set it up and put a video on there was cool. But the fact that he appears to be updating it attentively and really engaging with the fans and stuff, I mean, he's winning me over. He's doing a great job. I mean, that means a lot that he is paying attention to the fans and engaging them and not just sort of promoting the film, but actually having a dialogue about the making of the film, about the story, the characters. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
He's winning me over.
It's not the kind of PR talk that you see a lot in with other productions where you know that they're just there to promote the movie and they don't really care for the fans. Wow. So he's winning over one of the people that caused the ulcer? Or
yes,
wasn't
right.
That you?
No, but I thought we agreed that John Rhys-Davies caused the ulcer.
Right. Exactly. All righty. Very, very cool stuff. What else was in the news? Gosh, there was so much. We're never going to get to the end. Orlando Bloom. Now, is he going to be in or not?
I don't know. In this story, when I put this in the notes, this was like from 2 weeks ago, so things might have changed. Although I feel like if there was somebody came out and definitively said yes, that would have popped up to the top of the blogs and the Google News and stuff. But I think they're still sort of – they're hemming and hawing. I don't think they actually are, but they just haven't come out and said, yes, he's returning.
The article that I found about Dino Gorman, his casting, it concludes with other stars returning for The Hobbit include Sir Ian Holm as the older Bilbo Baggins, Sir Ian McKellen as Gandalf, Andy Serkis as Gollum, and Orlando Bloom as Legolas. So,
yeah, see, there you go. So
I think that everybody kind of assumes it, but I've not seen a confirmation. Another thing that I saw, and I really, you have to help me on this. I was in Rome for a couple of days, and so I only had access to Twitter very briefly, and I saw an update that Smaug was actually cast, that there is now an official kind of a...
Wow, really?
Is that the case, or was this just another rumor that just got hyped up via Twitter?
I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
I think that might be a rumor. Looking around.
Yeah, let me try to go back and find the original Twitter post that I saw. It was not an actor that I expected, but the name just escapes me right now. But in the meantime, let me play a little video clip that I found. And this is about Lord of the Rings. Event that apparently is going to happen in the United States, and I'm so jealous. It's the Lord of the Rings Motion Picture Trilogy Extended Edition 3-night event. Nobody's going to post about that on Twitter because you only have 140 characters. So bad marketing there, but I do like the initiative. And here's what it's all about. Wait a minute, I'm looking at this on the wrong computer. I can't play the audio from that computer. Let me quickly go to... Wow, I'm so prepared for this show. The OneRing.net had a story about that. So they are going to show the extended editions of The Lord of the Rings, and it's just going to be one evening only for three consecutive weeks. And wow, that must be awesome, because were these ever in theaters? I've only seen them on DVD. And I'm hoping to see them on Blu-ray soon, but I've not seen them in theaters. That must be so cool.
The Lord of the Rings Motion Picture Extended Edition Trilogy 3-night event. All extended editions with exclusive introduction by Peter Jackson. Only one night in movie theaters. The Fellowship of the Ring, June 14th. The Two Towers, June 21st. The Return of the King, June 28th. And coming soon, The Lord of the Rings Extended Edition Trilogy on Blu-ray, available June 28th. Tickets on sale now at fathomevents.com.
Okay. Are you going to go and see those movies?
Yes. Well, we'll see. If we have the time and energy to go and watch all three of them. But I think it would be fun. I missed out on the sort of, like, I went and watched it with friends, but didn't really get caught too much up in the hoopla of the films when they came out. And I kind of missed the days of waiting in line for the Star Wars movies and stuff. I feel like online ticketing has changed that experience. I remember when we had to camp out to get tickets to see opening night of Star Wars Episode One. So, yeah, I think it'd be really fun to go watch it with people.
I found a tweet. It was actually someone at replying me. It's Gabe, and he writes, "Hi, Father Roderick. I'm listening to the latest Secrets of the Hobbit podcast. What do you think for the voice of Smaug, Joe Pesci?"
I think that's a joke.
I think it's a joke. I think so too. But when I read it, I was like, I just read it very quickly. I was like, "What is that? What has it been announced? What, Joe Pesci?" I was just stunned, and I didn't have time to go look around on the OneRing.net because I was browsing the web on my iPhone. And so I was like, it just got stuck in my mind. Well, I can't believe they cast Joe Pesci for Smaug. But I think it's just Gabe just wants me to react to the speculation that's going on the various forums where people are kind of talking about who could, you know, who would
Gabe's
be a good voice.
Trick you into
that's how rumors get started, people
talking about it on the show.
We will not post this in the show notes, this rumor, because then it might, you know, kind of pollute the waters even more. And people are like,
yeah,
what,
we don't want to perpetuate.
Joe Pesci, gosh, you know, I know that some people are very good at doing impersonations. How cool would it be if someone could do like a YouTube video with the various voices of like impersonations of Smaug, and then take lines from The Hobbit and do them in the various, you know, as the various actors that have been rumored?
Yes, that would be awesome.
How cool would that be?
We gotta find somebody to do that.
That would be, I think, an instant hit, at least among Hobbit fans. My goodness. Well,
Pesci, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you could possibly come up with a worse actor to play him.
Especially because with the kind of movies that he's done before. Oh my gosh. Anyway, back to the real news. Sorry for bringing
Bieber.
Oh no. Then that dragon should be killed with not just one arrow. I'm just saying. Imagine Smaug starting a song on top of his treasure. I think if George Lucas made the Hobbit, then we might get a song somewhere with the dragon. He's done it in the prequels. He's done it in the original Star Wars trilogy. But this is not a show about Star Wars and my frustrations about some of the decisions that George Lucas made. This is a story about, this is a show about news. And let's see, what else have we got? Well, let's go to the fan world. Last time, in our last episode, we talked about this awesome online social network for fans of Tolkien called mymiddle-earth.com. I registered. We are there with a group around this show. There was some more cool news or some more developments that we've not mentioned yet, but perhaps we can bring it up now. We've actually been talking with the people that created the mymiddle-earth.com, and mm-hmm. they have this online radio station, right?
Yes, they do. It's in fact, it predated the social network. It was called Dúnedain Radio. And actually, it still continues to be called Dúnedain Radio, though I think they're transitioning all their sort of properties over to be commonly branded as Middle Earth. So it'll pretty soon, I think it will be called Middle Earth Radio or Middle Earth Network Radio. But yeah, it broadcasts almost 24/7. They play a lot, a mixture of, like, it's basically music for fantasy geeks. It's a mixture of like film soundtracks, video game soundtracks, but also like Tolkien, bands that produce original music inspired by Tolkien, like the Lonely Mountain Band. And also like Celtic music and other sort of traditional music like that. It's very I listen to it more and more actually while I'm at work. And what they've also started doing is they are making agreements with various podcasts. For example, The Tolkien Professor and Middle Earth Minutes and some of those other shows. And they're broadcasting or they're syndicating episodes on Dúnedain Radio of those podcasts.
And so our show might actually be part of that radio station
yep,
sometime in the
right.
future. And that is very, very cool, and a great honor, because, of course, we have our listeners, and we gather them mostly through iTunes, I think, that people discover this. But this is going to expose us to, I would say, the best Tolkien fans in the world, because extremely knowledgeable people in that network, and almost makes me feel a little bit afraid to record any more episodes, because already people know that I'm a kind of a noob when it comes to Tolkien and not really knowledgeable. But now, you know, compared to all these experts on mymiddleearth.com, I'm going to look
there's a wide variety of people. Their shows are really wide and varied. I mean, they have the Tolkien professor, of course, and we all look like noobs compared to him. But a lot of their shows are actually there. I think part of the reason they like your shows, just your entire brand, in fact, is a lot of their shows are sort of they're focused on LOTRO, on Lord of the Rings Online.
Oh, okay.
And I think they kind of want to. On the one hand, I think they like Secrets of Middle Earth, and the fact that it uses LOTRO in sort of an interesting way by immersing the listener in it. But also, I think they also want to round out their offering of shows with things that are a little different. What's interesting is that there's also sort of a strong streak of practicing Christians amongst the people organizing this thing. So they have great respect for your work, of course.
All right. Yeah, because that's always been my one of my ideas, is that with a show like this one, and with we've got a lot of Secrets of shows that we do, one for about Star Wars, even Star Trek, and Narnia. We did. We're still doing a pretty big one in terms of listenership, which is about Harry Potter. A lot of these stories do integrate Christian elements, either explicitly, like Narnia, or in a more, let's say, muted way, or much more like the values that these stories carry across, like what Tolkien did with his work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an enrichment if you know that background, and if we can show the fans of the franchise, or of the books or the movies, the inspiration that led to certain story decisions. And I think it is something that, especially in a culture that is secularizing a lot, and people don't necessarily have that cultural background anymore, the Christian background that was still part of the universe of these writers, that it can help us understand these stories better and appreciate them more. And so that's kind of the idea of a lot of these movie podcasts that I make. So it's not a hidden way to evangelize people without them realizing
them, you know, converting them.
At the end of every show, we take out a bucket of holy water that we pour over the iPods. No, it's just it's about sharing. I mean, being a priest, of course, I'm you know, my environment, my culture is the Catholic culture, but I do believe that I hope that just kind of adding that and showing the relevance of that culture for the stories that we enjoy so much is enriching for our listeners, whether they are Christians or want to be Christians or not. I do believe that the Christian, just being aware of the Christian roots of our culture, is so important, because it helps you understand the world that we are part of. And despite the fact that many people do not seem to like religion that much, or you know, don't want anything to do with it, it is still part of the culture that we live in, and it can help you understand the people around you better, if only the Christians or those wacky Catholics. Anyway. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Our stuff is going to fit right in with their stuff, and you know, not only is it great because it will expose our show, you know, it will expose other Tolkien fans to our show, but I think the flip side is that it will expose, maybe some of our listeners can go over and start listening to some of the stuff on Dúnedain Radio and looking around on Middle Earth Network and expose them to other things they might be interested in. So it's just community building.
Exactly. And there are some awesome shows that I discovered just by listening to that radio station. And some really in-depth discussions also about the music, about so many things. Even if you're like me, a novice when it comes to the world of Tolkien, it's a great way to get acquainted with this the whole the story and the background of these stories. And the only shows that might be a little bit difficult to listen to for people that don't play the game are the shows about the Lord of the Rings, because it also talks about a lot of the technical aspects. It's fascinating for people that do enjoy that game, and I'm one of them. But I can imagine that if you're not familiar with these massive multiplayer online role-playing games, that might sound like Elvish to you without translation.
Yes.
So I was trying to get some aggro from the end boss, and then I boosted my whatever healing power with 20 points, and then just discussions like that.
Yes. Yes.
There's a lot of math involved in these games. Well, let's go back.
Yes, it can sound like a foreign language.
Oh,
can
yeah,
it?
Totally, totally. Let's wrap up our news stories for today. The Forbes, which is it's a magazine about money, right? They try to calculate the value of Smaug's treasure. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's just a fun little article I found. It was published like a month ago, so it's kind of an oldish story compared to the newer things we've been doing. But it's sort of a fun little story where I guess Forbes periodically does a feature where they talk about the fortunes of fictitious characters, and so they did a little story where they talked about who are like the richest 15 characters in fiction. And I don't know if they actually, it's not terribly scientific, and it's kind of, they don't necessarily try to figure out who the richest 15 are, but they picked 15 characters who are, who are portrayed as millionaires or billionaires or whatever in fiction. And I guess they're trying to capitalize on the interest in Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth and Tolkien right now. Mm-hmm. So they did Smaug. And so they just do a fun little, very sort of going through and trying to figure out, estimating like how big Smaug probably is, how big right. his cavern was, and based on Bilbo's descriptions, how filled was it with gold, and based on some of the other things that that Bilbo says, they try to estimate, okay, so they probably have roughly this volume of treasure, and Bilbo seems to, when Bilbo takes some, it's about half gold, half silver, so maybe Smaug stuff is half gold, half silver, and they estimate sort of, and it's filled with some of these other things, so they kind of use some math, but it's all very, very approximate and making a lot of assumptions, and then they try to estimate how much gold and silver does he have, how many diamonds and jewels does he have, and then they use the current prices of those various precious metals and jewels to estimate how much money he actually has. And so ultimately what they come out on is, when you add the precious metals and the diamonds, the worth of the precious metals and diamonds that they estimate he has about 8 billion. And then when you add the Arkenstone of Thrain on there, which is this, the huge stone that Bilbo finds and gives to Thorin, that's another half a billion. So, so ultimately, Smaug comes out at about $8.6 billion, and that puts him in seventh place on the 2011 Forbes Fictional 15.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really fun article. It's got a, it's sort of, it's very amusing. I think I'm trying to figure out. Oh yeah, okay. So it is in order. So the number one on the Forbes Fictional 15 of 2011 is Scrooge McDuck from that old Disney cartoon.
Fantastic! Oh man, what people will write about—it's just unbelievable. Hey, that brings us to the end of this episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. And as we always do at the end of the show, it's time for our tip of the week. Dave, did you have time to come up with a tip of the week?
Yes, I'm gonna throw my buddy Matt Shaw, that I know from the Tolkien Professor Silmarillion Seminar, a bone, and point people to his petition, which you can find a link to on our Facebook page. It's a petition to get the Tolkien Professor on the Colbert Report.
Cool.
So, go click it and sign it.
Fantastic. My tip of the week, I got that one from the chat room, is the Lord of the Rings name generator, or perhaps it's probably also valid for The Hobbit. There are actually two out there. One will give you just your Hobbit name. I got Farumbras Hornblower. Not really a great name.
Mine was Will Mugfort.
Will Mugfort. Ah, that sounds kind of cool. There's another one that is much more elaborate, where you can not only generate your hobbit name, but also your elven name, your dwarven name, your wizard name, and your human name. And you can type in your own name first, and it will figure out something, or it does do something with that. So my hobbit name on that website is Merari the Small Darnswool the Ringfinder. I think I'd rather be an elf or something like that. So, an elf, I would be Nada, King of the Noldor. Wizard, I'd be Tarkun, Lord of the West. I like that one, Tarkun.
It's a good one. And you get to be a lord.
Absolutely. And my dwarven name would be Tigan, Son of Rorin. That sounds really dwarvish. And if I'm just a human, I'm Vomir, the King's Archer. Ooh, Vomir, that sounds like, you know, something, I don't know, related to bad hobbit food, spoiled hobbit food. Vomir. All right, well, we'll include a link to that for our listeners so they can have some fun with that. And if you want to send us your hobbit / elven / dwarven name, you can go to our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. Leave us a review on iTunes if you have time, and spread the word about this podcast. We would love to have some more listeners, and we thank you for listening. This show was brought to you by Bluehost. Go to our website, click on the Bluehost banner to set up your website and your own domain name for just $6.99 per month. It's excellent value for money. And by, of course, setting up your domain through our link, through our banner, or Bluehost banner, you will help us continue to provide you with shows like these. Check out sqpn.com for many more SQPN shows, and let us know what you think on our Facebook page. Just look for The Secrets of the Hobbit. You can follow us on Twitter as well. SQPN Hobbit is our Twitter account. And if you missed all of this, or if I went too fast, just go to thehobbit.sqpn.com for the show notes. Dave, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for listening. See you next week. God bless.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.